Welcome to Wonderland, the podcast where I go down the rabbit hole to research things you may be curious about. My name is Ami, and I'll be your guide on this trip to Wonderland.
Welcome back, my Wonderlings. This month, we're going to spend some time in a rabbit hole that's filled with mythical creatures, dragons, wizards, and paladins who exist only through the imagination of over 50 million people worldwide.
I wonder.
So what are we wondering about?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
That's right. Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D, as it's often called by its players. In today's episode, I'll speak to a local dungeon master about the journey from player to DM, what goes into planning a session, and more. But before we get there, let's learn a little about the history of Dungeons & Dragons. What is Dungeons & Dragons? At the highest level, D&D is a fantasy tabletop role-playing game derived from miniature war games. Players create characters who embark on a quest or adventure in a fantasy setting where a dungeon master, the storyteller and official of the group, presents the players in the party with scenarios that they must decide how their character will proceed. Together, the party works to solve puzzles, battle foes, forge materials, and generally explore the fictional world that's been created for them. Along the way, they earn experience points, making their characters stronger. Given that this is a game that is essentially of the imagination, which is how people have played games for eons, when do you think Dungeons & Dragons was invented?
I would like to think that it was invented in the Middle Ages, because it seems like a lot of the characters are middle age or fantasy based, but I'm guessing it was probably developed in the 1950s, 1960s maybe.
It's been around for quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's been around like back when there was no electronics and all.
Right.
It used to be like a board game.
1970. It was in the 70s. I'm going to say either 74 or 78.
So that feels pretty specific. I feel like you might have some insider knowledge on this, doing all that research.
I'm terrible with remembering stuff like that, but I think it's the right date. Somewhere in 74, 78.
Officially, the game was first published in 1974. But in actuality, the idea for the game was being refined by an avid couple of gamers earlier in the 1960s. Do you know who invented Dungeons & Dragons?
I do not, actually.
Sir Dungeon of Dragon.
Gary Gygax.
Gary Gygax.
Yeah.
All by himself?
I believe he had friends that he was doing it with.
As I said, while the game wasn't officially released until 1974, the beginnings of what one day would be Dungeons & Dragons were forming in the mind of Gary Gygax in the late 1960s. Gygax enjoyed playing a board game called War Games, which simulated actual battles from historic wars, but used a six-sided die to impact the outcome. Gygax found the game flawed due to the die, and in the version he played, he added a component where players drew a poker chip out of a bag of 20 to allow for a more random outcome. Eventually, he would buy a 20-sided die from a school supply catalog that replaced the chip-in-a-bag element from his game, but kept the randomness. Then, in 1969, Gary Gygax met Dave Arneson at a convention that Gygax was putting on for people to play his version of War Games. With the popularity of his version growing, Gygax introduced a new game in 1971 called Chainmail, which introduced the use of magic. While Gygax was excited about the use of magic, many players were not. Gygax and Arneson then spent the next few years exchanging ideas for a variant of Chainmail until they had Dungeons & Dragons. The original D&D set included three booklets, Men & Magic, Monster & Treasure, and the Underworld & Wilderness Adventures, which provided the foundational rules for world building, character creation, and combat. The duo marketed their game to a wargame publisher, but were turned down. So, Gygax and a childhood friend, Don Kay, founded a game publishing company in October 1973 called Tactical Studies Rules so that they could self-publish Dungeons & Dragons. Eventually, Tactical Studies Rules was restructured into TSR Hobbies, only to later oust Gygax from the company in the mid-1980s and sell the company to Wizards of the Coast in 1997. There's a fair amount of drama and other things involving the evolution of this company that I read about while in this rabbit hole, and I'll link that on WTWLpod.com. Since the original 1,000 copies published, Dungeons & Dragons has had several changes to game mechanics, introduced new character types, and campaign settings. Regardless of the changes made to the mechanics, the use of dice is still an instrumental part of gameplay. How many dice do you think are used to play, and how many sides do they have?
That's a hard one to answer, because you can play with an assortment of dice that are kind of optional, but you can play with a coin. I'm going to start with the lowest one. So you flip a coin, so two sides. There's a D4, four-sided, a D6, a D8, a D10, a D12, a D20. There's a D30 I've never used. I think there's something higher than that, but D100 is the highest I think you'd ever actually use in a game. Most people roll two D10s, and that'll get you, so you can actually have like a percentage.
Okay. So what do you roll with?
The standard ones. Okay. The standard ones is a D4, a D6, a D8, a D10, a D12, and a D20.
How do you know which one to use? Someone tell you?
So if you're rolling like ability checks, most of your checks can be with a D20.
Okay.
So most of your initial rolls to see if you can or can't do something, or if someone else can or can't do something to you, is most of the time going to be D20. And then the rest of them are usually used to roll to say, okay, well, I do this much damage, or I get this many points towards my save, or...
It turns out that this was a harder question to answer than I originally thought. Though the standard dice set includes 7 dice, one with 4 sides, one with 6, one with 8, one with 10, one with a percentile, one with 12 sides, and the 20-sided die. But there are many variations and combinations that might be used. The dice are used in the game mechanics to determine a player's success in battle and in tasks that move the story forward. So in a world which is largely freeform, but where the rules are specific, it is important to have someone with the group who can be the referee and move the story along, as well as play the part of NPCs or non-player characters and monsters. This is where the Dungeon Master comes in. To learn more about the Dungeon Master, I turn to one of my oldest friends, Jeremy Black, for his insight.
All right. Hi there, my wonderlings, and welcome back to another episode of Welcome to Wonderland. I am here today with one of my oldest and dearest friends from way back in the day, Jeremy Black, and we are going to talk about what it's like to be a dungeon master for Dungeons & Dragons. So, hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Amy.
Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad to be on.
Absolutely. Before we get into it, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. So I have known Ami for, 20 years?
Since
is that too long?
2003.
Yeah. Yeah, that's over 20 years. That's scary. I'll age myself, too. I'm talking about D&D, I think. So we'll get there, too. But no, I've been playing D&D for over 30 years, since I was in middle school. So.
Do you remember your very first Dungeons & Dragons character?
Oh, I don't I do actually, but I don't remember them in enough information to tell you anything about them beyond they were not made right. I just wasn't following rules because my friends and I in middle school, we got a hold of all the material for D&D. It was a second edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, and we started playing it, and we didn't know the rules. So as we went through and figure the rules out, we made our characters, and like it was just really whatever we wanted to at that point. So our characters were not, they were fundamentally broken.
Oh, so I didn't realize that there were so many rules with Dungeons and Dragons. Like in my head, you know, and I've known people who've played for my entire life, but I thought it was just kind of, you were like, oh, and you pick a character and you kind of do what you want, and then you're like, roll for initiative or whatever, and then just do whatever you want. And if it's a good roll, then yay, you get to do it. And if it's not, then so sad. But I played for the first time a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, like I have a book and there's like stuff, an app, all of this going on with it. And I was like, I did not realize it was this involved. So you started in middle school, and then you played not correct. When did you learn to play correctly?
Play correctly? It was in middle school. It was still later on though. I moved here in high school and to South Carolina. And, when I moved, I lost all my friends essentially that played D&D with. My dad was in the military. So, I got here and sold my books and didn't play again until about 2018, I think.
Okay.
So there was a big break in there, but then I picked up 5th edition and immediately learned all the rules and started as a player and switched over to DM again.
But so can you talk me through when you picked it back up then when in 2018? Because now you're a full-fledged adult at that point. Like you had been married with children, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you pick it back up?
You know, it was fun in middle school, and it was something I really enjoyed doing. And we went camping with a larger group of people when we did homeschool for my kids. And it was just something that we started playing there. And I just, from then on, just got the bug again and started playing it again.
Okay. So for someone who doesn't play Dungeons & Dragons, kind of talk about what goes into that character creation. And then we'll kind of move to the story and all that when we talk about you being a DM. But go, because I assume the first step is I need a character. I can't play without a character, right?
Yeah. And that's I think that's where a lot of people get lost, is that even if you have a experienced DM helping you create a character, you don't really know what you're expecting to make. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to be what races should I be? Well, it's been out for so long. There's dozens of races you could pick from. Well, which one should I be? I don't really know. It's up to you. Well, how do I know? And it's a whole lot of research to make a character right. So a lot of times what we'll do is, if someone's first starting out, if they don't know what they want, you can have like a pre-generated character. That way they can play through it a little bit and kind of get an idea of what the game is all about. Mm-hmm. And then learn, okay, well, I like playing as a human, but I would also like to play as an elf. So what's the advantage of an elf? Oh, okay. What's the advantage of playing as a, you know, an orc or a dwarf or a halfling or any other things? And then from there, it just kind of gets into little nuances. So the first part of it, though, is picking the race, picking what class you want to start out with, rolling your stats, which is probably the most fun for new players, is rolling their stats together. And then finding out how to put them in the right place.
So how do you roll stats?
Everyone does a little differently, I think. But I think the standard is you roll 4d6s. So 6-sided dice, you roll 4 of them at once. And you drop the lowest one. If you roll any ones. And then the highest you can get on that roll is 18. So 18 is the maximum you can have for a stat when you start out. And as you play the game or as you adjust your stats, the highest you can actually get is 20 without some sort of special conditions. But the lowest you can get is, I think, 8.
Oh.
So you're rolling it for all of your stats. You have 6 different stats. You have strength, intelligence, wisdom, constitution, dexterity, and charisma. I think I said that right.
What was that?
So you have strength, mm-hmm. Constitution, dexterity, wisdom, intelligence, and charisma.
Oh, charisma. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, what's the last one? Okay, charisma. I got it. And so generally when someone is coming to play Dungeons & Dragons, and I guess a lot of it is shifted to online, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But like, do you build your characters as a team? So you're like, okay, these are the however many people. I don't know if there's a limit. Like, I don't know if this is a 2 to 100 people situation, or do you do it all together, or do you kind of do that on your own and just everybody hopes you aren't a big fat liar?
So you can play it. You can play D&D by yourself.
Sound fun.
Buy like a pre-made campaign or a pre-made setting and play it. It's more like a, you know, finished shooter, maybe play your own story kind of thing. One of those books where you, okay, I want to do this. Well, turn to page 17 and kind of play
choose your own adventure.
Choose your own adventure. Thank you. You can go up to 7 or 8 players. I wouldn't go any higher than that. It gets really hard to go higher than that because at that point, everyone's kind of sitting around waiting for their turn and it gets kind of drawn out. You can't really get anything done until the next round.
So, okay.
But you generally want to roll them all together. So if you have a group, especially a group that knows each other, you want to do it all together. So everyone's kind of balanced. Like, okay, well, I want to play as like a wizard, for example. Well, it's going to be hard to play as a wizard if 3 other people in the team want to be wizards too. You want to kind of balance it out. So you want to make sure you have somebody to take the hits and someone to heal and someone to, you know, do a lot of damage either through casting or whatever they have.
Okay. So you kind of build it together as a team. And is it possible that one of your teammates is just like, no, absolutely, positively, this is what I'm going to do. I don't care if there is already four wizards. I'm going to be a wizard too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a reflection of real life. Everyone, people do that in real life too.
I'm doing what I want, okay? Okay, so we have built a character. And what character, so when you picked it back up, you built a character. And I assume you played with that same character for some amount of time. Or was it just that night camping?
I did, yeah. I played with that one for a while, yeah.
Okay. And is there an end to the game?
There is an end to campaigns, if there is an ending at all. But you make new characters, play new campaigns, or some campaigns are set up to go forever if you want to play it that way. It's really okay. Just whatever your preference is, whatever between the DM and the players, however they want to do it.
So there are a lot of rules, but it sounds like there's also a lot of flexibility in it.
There's a whole lot of flexibility, yeah. If you aren't adaptable, it's going to get really boring really fast.
Okay, so you played, how long did you play once you started it again before you were like, I think I want to be a DM?
So, okay, picking back up in 2018, I think it was 2019 by the time I started DMing again. So okay. A lot of times what it would be is we'd have a, you know, dedicated DM. And if the dedicated DM is not available that week, if we're playing weekly, then unless someone else wants to DM, you're not playing. So it was really easy to get back into, okay, well, you know, Ryan's not available or Ace is not available, so I'm going to be the DM now. So I'll DM that week. And then, you know, after they finish their campaign, if no one else volunteers to DM for the next campaign, then here we go. Here I am.
So what goes into being a DM?
So there's a lot of preparation. So you can do it two ways. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare for my stuff initially. So I would just buy the pre-made campaign settings. So in 2019, I started DMing Tyranny of Dragons, which is two official DM D&D books that you play back to back. And that one, it started off in person. We were playing it weekly at my house. We had a whole setup and it was great. And then COVID hit and we had shift to online play. And it was an entirely different setup.
Was that over Zoom and things?
Initially, we did it through, what did we do it through? I think we actually just started on Discord. And Discord's okay. Been kind of where we stuck at. But you can play it. Initially, you're playing on Discord and just talking through it, you know, theater of the mind. But then we kind of got more involved in it and started using things like Roll20. Or there's some tabletop applications you can install on your computer. Just share your screen and it looks nice.
Okay.
You can play it without having the visuals, but the visuals definitely help for things like strategy and combat.
And I feel like, and I may be mistaken, but you had like a fancy table, right?
I did. When I was in person, I had a fancy table.
Like, and it had some sort of display in the table. Like it was still electronic or something?
A little.
It had lights,
maybe? It kind of. I had a projector mounted on the ceiling and it projected straight down and did like a top-down view of whatever I wanted. So I just would cast an image onto my computer and have the projector put on the screen and we would put on that.
So if you're playing an official story, you said that you ended up purchasing a storyline from, which is, I guess, a known and common one from, I don't know, wherever you purchased Dungeons & Dragons stories from. And does that then dictate the literal storyline? Like everybody who's playing that same campaign is doing it the same way? Or no, because the characters are so different, there's parts of it, like the end is maybe the same? Like how does that work?
So that goes back into being adaptable for it. So you have different characters. You may have four wizards. They probably won't make it very far before they have to, you know, roll new characters because they've gotten themselves killed. But yeah, it's the same campaign setting for everyone. The same, you know, non-player characters are showing up. Now everyone can throw in their own spin on things, but more or less the storyline stays the same. Especially on the official stuff, you kind of want to. You don't want to make anybody feel like they're being railroaded. Like, okay, well, the next step is you got to go to this, you know, you have to go into this cave. Well, what if I don't want to go to the cave? What if I want to go back to town and, you know, go hang out at the bar or something? You know, there's options. You don't want to make them feel pressured. Like they have to go to this cave or else, you know, that's the end of the game. Now, they might come back to that cave eventually.
I say, but they do eventually have to go to that cave, right?
Sometimes, not always. Sometimes you might have to just find ways to get through it. There are some campaigns that have things that people have difficulty dealing with. So, you know, if somebody doesn't like spiders or, you know, violence against children, maybe that's...
I don't think anybody likes violence against children, Jeremy.
That's not a common theme, but they're, Curse of Strahd is one that's set in like, it's like a vampire theme. And there's, you know, vampire children and they kind of suck.
I'm just getting a little worried there.
But some people don't want to see, you know, don't want to fight a kid. And, well, I'm okay with fighting a kid. It's fine. but, you know, you kind of want to make sure you're not making somebody uncomfortable while you're playing. You're not presenting them with something that they have to deal with, that there's like, oh, this is my nightmare. This is not fun for me.
So how much of it is your own storytelling versus what's been supplied to you? Like, do you have to then like think on the whim or?
Yeah. It's still pretty much your storytelling. You just have the background of what's supposed to happen or what could happen. But to your point about the ending, you know, the ending is probably different for everybody because by the time you get to the end, so much has happened that obviously you may succeed, you may not succeed. You may find some sort of compromise. Now if you're doing something that's not, you know, an official book or even not official, but if you haven't just bought a campaign from somewhere,
We did a very unofficial one when we did it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't turn around to him like he's there. But like, I think that Micah was the gentleman who did our DM. And I think he just made something up for us for the podcast.
Yeah.
So.
And that's pretty common. I mean, not everybody plays with the books. The only reason I was playing for mine was because it was easy for me to prepare week to week. I already had all the maps made. I already had all the characters planned. So I just had to read through what was going to happen in the next, you know, 4 to 6 hours.
4 to 6 hours, and you played weekly.
Yeah.
So how much preparation did you have to put in as the dungeon master for those 4 to 6 hours?
So it's funny. The more people you have playing, the less you have to prepare because they get into their own thing and they start feeding off of one another and you get into a town and that's going to be the entire session. They're going to be talking to people. They're going to talk to themselves. They're going to try and, you know, make something happen in the game that centers around their character. But it's as much preparation as you really want to put into it. And sometimes you can just wing it. I don't recommend winging it because it does get kind of dicey sometimes, but.
Dicey. Is that a pun there? Is that a Dungeons and Dragons pun?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I can't read it. What's it say?
Oh, what does it say? Oh, yeah. What's it? They see me rolling?
Oh, it came into focus now. That's funny. True talk, how many Dungeons & Dragons shirts do you have?
I have two.
Okay. What's the other one say?
You know, I don't know. I didn't know what this one said, so I don't know what the other one says.
Okay. All right. So taking time to be a dungeon master could be, I mean, you could wing it, I guess, if you're especially quick on your feet and have a very robust imagination and you kind of are good at herding cats. But generally, you probably are putting some time into it. And is part of that time writing out a story or is it kind of just overhead bullet points about what might happen?
So when I was preparing for my campaign weekly, when I was doing a 5-year one, it was probably about 1 to 2 hours a week that I put into preparation. So reading the story and getting things set up for, you know, especially playing online, because we still play online, setting up all the monsters and their stats and everything so that when we start playing, I'm not like, oh, hang on a second, let me build this monster out and, you know, make it fun. In terms of if you're doing your own story, it's really how much you want to put into it. You could spend the entire week preparing, like, you know, 8 hours a day if you wanted to, if it's really that something you want to get in depth with.
Sure.
You know, some people could practically write a book about their story settings they've made up.
So you played this Tyranny of Dragons. Did I say that right?
Tyranny of Dragons, right? Yep.
Okay. And you started out in person with your group of 6, 8 people, whatever it was, and then COVID came, and so you went online. When the restrictions were lifted, did Dungeons and Dragons kind of stay an online thing, or did it go back to being an in-person thing?
You know, it did happen. It became an in-person thing again, although slowly, because those restrictions weren't lifted immediately and people were still uncomfortable for a long time. So what I ended up doing was we'd still play my campaign weekly and we played online, because during that time frame, we also lost a bunch of people who were playing in person with us.
Not to COVID.
And they weren't able to play online or didn't want to play online.
Gotcha.
So our group adjusted. We found people online who did want to play, who don't live anywhere near us. They can't play in person. So now we have, you know, the group that we still have that's been playing, that finished that campaign out, you know, most of them are in South Carolina. One of them's in Michigan.
And so you did that for 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So how do you keep it fresh for 5 years? Like, what are you doing for 5 years for 4 to 6 hours a week, 52 weeks a year?
Well, the story continues. But that's, it really has a lot to do with the player, the people you're playing with. You know, they keep it as interesting, just as much as players as you do as a DM.
Okay. So you got to the end of that campaign and I'm guessing fought a dragon. Did you fight a dragon?
Yeah, a big one.
Did you guys win?
Well, I'm DMing, so I'm trying to kill them, but they did win, yes.
Okay, so that raises a good point. If you're the DM, then you are not a character. You don't get to play.
So that's a struggling for as a DM, that's a struggle early on, because you still want to play, especially as a new DM. You want to have a player. You want to have a way of interacting with the world that's not as a DM, but it quickly becomes obvious that you can't really be a player and efficiently play. So you can play as a DM NPC or DM PC. So you have a character that's playing with the players, and they might be there for a good reason. They might be there because the party doesn't have a healer, or the party doesn't know all the lore, and so this is some random stranger they picked up.
Historian they picked up.
Yeah, they picked up a historian, and I was like, oh, this guy knows all about dragons. He could tell us all about it. Or this person knows all about vampires and how to kill them, so we need him to tell us how that works, because they wouldn't find out otherwise. But when it gets to combat or role-playing, you know, you're basically talking to yourself. Or, you know, it's especially in a room full of, you know, six other players. It's like, okay, well, they're each controlling one character and you're controlling everything else. So you already got all the monsters and, you know, all the enemies they're fighting. And you also, on top of that, have this other player you've created that's sitting in there that's, you know, you as well. So you're fighting yourself as well.
Oh, so they won and you were defeated and you were so sad about it, you decided that you were going to start being a player again.
I'll be a player again, yes.
So that's what you do now, is you're back to being a player.
For now, yeah.
So, but you would DM again.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So what made you want to be a player? Just because you did 5 years in a row and you're like, listen.
Taking turns. So some of the players also wanted to DM, and they would do the same thing to me as I did early on, which is if I was unavailable, they would DM and do like a one shot. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row, they would DM in their own setting.
Can they derail your story?
They would do it in their own setting. They wouldn't do it in the same campaign.
Oh,
you can have like a co-DM and you can kind of share the process, but it kind of ruins the fun a little bit. So if I'm preparing and I've read all of Tyranny of Dragons, and then I have somebody else come in and help me, then they've also read all of Tyranny of Dragons. They know all the twists and turns and, you know, what needs to happen in this room in order to trigger this event.
Okay. So if you were to do it again, would you do another pre-made campaign or would you make a Jeremy Black campaign?
I have a few books on my shelf of official stuff that I would pull out again, because it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I can be creative and create my own setting, but I have that to lean on. So I can put my own spin on it while I'm playing it.
The same people play with you if you were to do it again, or you like,
yeah.
Okay, but they're not the same characters.
No, different characters every time.
Different characters every time. And if you die when you're playing. So this came up because my character, when we played for the All About Nothing podcast episode, ended up in another dimension by herself. Like, uh-huh. It was all very unfortunate. And then that was also the end of our time. So she's just still also in this other dimension by herself. If she dies, I was like, I have to sit out and just sit here and look at you guys for the next however long. So then what? If a character dies along the way, what happens? Like,
well, it's a fantasy setting. There's about a half dozen ways to bring someone back from the dead. you know, starting as a zombie, point. But all the way up to, you know, like true resurrection or a wish, or, you know, you can get them out of other dimensions. You can bring them back, or you can make that an entire campaign in itself that the party is going to go rescue your player.
I hope they do. She's very sad over there, I'm sure. And I think she might be a cow. She I can't remember.
I hope the dimension is cow friendly.
She might be a burger now. No, like, it was one of those where I don't remember enough about it, but like, she would command animals or become animals or something. And
some sort.
If she didn't do it right, she became a cow. So, like, I don't know. I think she might be a cow in that other dimension. I don't remember. It's been years now. But so you could, what if you just hate your character partway through?
Then you can adjust your character. Most of the time, DMs are very open to letting you adjust your character and get it to, you know, because if you're not having fun, then what's the point? It's a game.
Yeah.
So if you've made a character and you realize that, whoops, I gave them this entire set of spells or these abilities that don't really work, you know, because there is an action economy. You only can do so much in a turn. If you aren't doing something that you enjoy or think is fun or cool, then you and the DM can work it out and figure out either if you need to just change the skills your character is using or if you just need to, you know, get a new character altogether.
Does it have to be through story? So, like, does it have to be like, oh, well, this character met a peasant who gave them a magic pebble and now they are very strong, but they don't remember how to do this other thing?
It helps, but it doesn't have to happen that way.
It could just literally be offline and be like, listen, Jeremy, my character sucks. What can we do?
You know, a lot of times someone will have a character that's pretty good, but it's not what they want. But you can make changes to that character and it still feel like the same character. It just has slightly different abilities.
Yeah. I see, because I feel like I chose mine based on I thought she'd be cute. Like, I don't think I necessarily thought through the whole thing. I think it was really just to make myself a cute little character. Mm-hmm. Okay. So before we get all distracted on that, I want to make sure I hit all these topics. I'm trying to keep us, and we're very close on time now. So we have talked about when you started. We talked about when you started again. Talked about you became a DM. We talked about kind of what goes into being a DM and how you're keeping it fresh for 5 years. And essentially, it just comes down to who you're playing with then, it sounds like. Across the board, you get a good group of people together and you have fun making something up, playing with your imaginations. What is the most surprising thing that you've ever done or learned doing Dungeons and Dragons as a DM?
Most surprising thing, like in a game?
Sure.
Okay.
It's a terribly worded question, but thank you.
So, okay, I'm going to kind of touch on something I mentioned a minute ago, which was when COVID restrictions were lifted, people started adjusting, going back to playing again in person. There's a game store probably close to you. I think it's a Firefly Games.
Firefly, sure.
Yeah, so Firefly is great. And they had, I don't know if they still do, but they had Adventure League nights. So Adventure League is pre-made official modules that each, you know, they have entire campaigns, but the modules are set to be 4-hour games. So everyone could go in there and play these 4-hour games together. That was probably the most fun I had, you know, week to week, just because, you know, I was also as a player, but every party was different, and it's fun to learn everyone's, like, you know, what kind of quirky things this person does with their character versus what you can do with yours and how you surprise each other. The most surprising thing I think I did in any of those games, though, was it was a really high level campaign module, and we were fighting this end boss, which was this really powerful god type creature who was opening a portal to another dimension, and he casts Meteor Swarm on us, which is a 9th level spell. And none of us were doing very well. So we were all kind of low on hit points. So Meteor Swarm probably would have killed us. But my character just happened to have an ability that steals spells. So this guy casts a spell on us, and I just kind of, you know, sucked it up. And and it didn't work, and he couldn't cast it the rest of the game, and that was apparently one of his main abilities. And that really, really made it difficult for him to beat us at that point. I think we ended up running out of time before that portal opened, so we did lose that game. But it definitely made it more challenging for the BM at that point. But that's where you have to be adaptable.
So when you do that, when you suck up his power, I assume if it's a giant ninth level power, I don't know what that means, but you said it like it's high.
Yeah, it's the highest level spell you can cast. It's a ninth level spell.
Fantastic then. So it's the highest level spell level you can cast. And you're like, this is mine now. You can't just take it, right? Like that's the whole thing with Dungeons and Dragons. You have to roll?
Yep, he had to roll.
So did you roll a 20?
So he had to roll. It was a save. He had to make a save that I didn't steal it from him. But he failed that save.
Okay.
So I stole it. I couldn't cast that spell against him because now on lower level spells, if I stole it, I could cast it because I could also cast spells. But I can't cast ninth level spells because that's not my character. Because
you're not one of the five wizards, right?
Yeah, I was not. I was a rogue in that situation. I was an arcane trickster. So I can cast fifth level spells, and that's the most. So ninth level, I could steal it, and he can't cast it again, but I can't cast it myself.
Well, if someone was listening to this podcast and they were like, you know what, this sounds like fun, and I think I might want to play Dungeons and Dragons, how would you tell them to get started?
Find a group. Find somebody online who's interested in playing. There's all sorts of forums, and Discord has an official channel for D&D. And it's all, a bunch of people looking to play either as DMs or as players.
Okay. And then in that case, they just get online and play like you guys did during COVID.
Yep. Or you can also check in with Firefly. They still do Adventure League. They used to have, they would have it where you come in as a new player and you could play, you can walk in the door and they'd help you build a character and you'd play that night.
And since those, and this is going to be a random offshoot because I was clearly closing this episode up, but now I have a question. In those little 4-hour campaigns, are there characters that are higher level than you or everybody starting at the same level?
So it's a range. It's tiered based. So, the each campaign will be rated. So it'll be like, okay, well, this is a campaign where you can be level 1 to 4. And then this next tier is level 5 to 10. And then it's a level 11 to 17 and 17 to 20.
Okay. So you're playing with other people who are kind of the same level as you.
Roughly the same level.
Yeah.
They put there's a lot of rules around that just in general, quite for Adventure League, that they're their own unique thing. But you play a game and you level up. And if you're a new player, you wouldn't have that experience yet. So you start off at level 1, but you could be playing with level 4 players.
Okay. Well, let's see. I think I have gone through all of my questions. We've kind of talked about, have you made any friends from Dungeons and Dragons who you wouldn't have come across normally?
Yeah. I mean, all the people I play with online, I made friends with, friends from working, from playing at Firefly. It's a good opportunity to meet people.
Do you guys ever talk outside of weekly Dungeons and Dragons session?
I think I talk to my D&D group more than I talk to anyone else.
There's a group chat, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And it's not even on mute. Sounds like you're actually paying attention to it.
Oh, have you heard it pop up? It has been actually coming.
Is that you? Yeah, I heard the ding. That's your Dungeons and Dragons group chat?
It is. I think they're talking about buying a cell phone, unrelated to D&D. But we talk about everything else, not related to D&D, too.
Well, hello to Jeremy's group. Do y'all have a name, like a clever name for your group or anything?
No.
No.
I think we all create our own Discord channels, but I think mine was Long Distance D&D.
Oh, okay. You're like, no, it's not at all. It's very factual. This is what it is. Okay. Well, then I don't have any additional questions. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today about what it's like to be a DM. I know when I was talking about playing before, you gave me a plethora of resources to check out. So I will probably circle back to that and then also ask you again for those so that I can post it alongside the episode for people who may be interested in getting started in Dungeons and Dragons, some of the resources that they can get into. I ended up buying a book from Second and Charles, and it had like all the characters in it and all of that. And then there was some sort of online something we were doing with it as well, but that's just where we were rolling real die. I don't remember. Okay. But anyway, so that's all I've got. And I'm going to get some resources. We've got Jeremy here with us. He is a dungeon master. Nope, he's not. He was a dungeon master and he will be again.
As Jeremy said, he plays still, but now as a player and not as a dungeon master. With more than 50 million people playing annually, there are a lot of folks out there who play. Have you ever played?
I have played Dungeons and Dragons.
My friend brought it up to me because they always saw me reading and they're like, well, if you like reading and making your own characters and all that, you should try this. And then after that, there was no going back.
They were right then, yeah. So it was a good fit for you.
I've played just once, but I really like the idea of it. I like fantasy and I like games, and the thought of a choose-your-own-adventure game is very appealing to me. But like a girl in the 70s with paper dolls, I love the idea of designing a character. What was your character?
Tell me your name first.
Megan.
Megan. And this is your original design.
Yes.
But it is, so we're at Soda City Comic Con, guys. And this is a costume that Megan here designed as an original based on her Dungeons and Dragons character. So tell me a little bit about your character and how you got into Dungeons and Dragons.
My character is Celeste. She is part of the Fae world. But she goes on adventures to try to save people and help out where she can. And I got into Dungeons and Dragons because I always loved the storytelling. I always loved the adventure. And you never know where your character might end up with, like, dice and all, because it's like fate. You roll and your fate is decided based on your role.
Well, when I was in high school and I played with friends in high school, I want to say I had some sort of a cleric paladin, and most recently when I played, I had some sort of a dwarf cleric, I think, something like that.
What were they named?
I don't remember my character from high school, but I think that the character that I had most recently was a sort of a play on my own last name, but I think it was like Grogon or something like that.
I actually had to go back to the D&D Beyond app to look up the character I created for when I played as part of a series on the All About Nothing podcast. In my infinite knowledge and ability, I created a Lightfoot halfling druid named Safade who was a sage. Does it make sense? I don't even know still. But I enjoyed it until I turned into a cow. So the only time I've played, it was for a podcast, but plenty of other people play, virtually and in person, all the time.
High school, I played until I got a girlfriend, and most recently it was about 3.5-4 hours.
Do you still play?
We would play if we could get our schedules in line.
When did you start playing?
Back when I was in high school.
Okay, so you look pretty young to me. So how long ago was that?
Back in like 2017, 2016.
Okay, so you're coming up on almost a decade of playing,
yes,
Dungeons and Dragons. And do you play with the same group of people, or like how many campaigns have you done?
I've done about a couple. I've done about 10.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are like small campaigns where there's like only 5 of us, mm-hmm, but there's always different
people. And speaking with people about Dungeons and Dragons, it's largely considered a fun way to spend a few hours with friends. But there have been times that D&D wasn't received so positively. Some groups believe the game promoted devil worship, witchcraft, suicide and homicide, and sexual deviance.
It is also the target of a group of concerned parents in the United States who call themselves BAD, B-A-D-D, bothered about Dungeons and Dragons. The reason they are bothered is because they believe the game has been involved in a number of murders and suicides across the United States and now in Canada.
The moral panic caused a sharp increase in sales in the early 1980s as people bought the game in sheer defiance. In addition to the issue of morality surrounding the game, there were accusations that players couldn't separate the fantasy of the game from reality, which could result in psychotic episodes. While there was no proof of a connection between the game and any of these instances, there is a notable story regarding a young man by the name of James Dallas Egbert III, who disappeared in 1979. The disappearance was reported in the news to be related to D&D games that occurred by invitation only in the steam tunnels underneath Michigan State University, where Egbert was a dungeon master.
And I'm going, this isn't a healthy game. How could it be a healthy game?
That game, and Deer's hunch that Egbert was playing it in the tunnels, made great fodder for headlines, but it was a dead end.
These reports were largely fueled by speculation and lacked factual findings, but thrusted Dungeons & Dragons and the people who played it unceremoniously into the spotlight. Apparently, Egbert's story was turned into a book called The Dungeon Master, The Disappearance of James Dallas Egbert III,
and loosely was the inspiration for a book which was later adapted into a movie called Mazes and Monsters.
Tom Hanks and his friends get caught up in a deadly game of fantasy.
I am the maze controller.
Until they take it too far.
I propose we play Mazes and Monsters in a real setting. It won't be a fantasy.
Too bad for one of them, because now there's no turning back.
This is only a game.
I know, I killed somebody.
Mazes and Monsters.
Despite any controversy surrounding the game, it would continue to grow in popularity. There are podcasts that are about Dungeons & Dragons, such as Critical Role.
Good day, critters.
Dimension 20.
Welcome, one and all, to Dimension 20.
And The Adventure Zone.
Strap on your fantasy seatbelts and brace your asses for The Adventure Zone.
According to Hasbro CEO, viewers on Twitch and YouTube consume over 150 million hours annually watching D&D gameplay. The game has influenced other modern video games and is featured in popular television shows like Freaks and Geeks and Stranger Things, as well as made into movies, with the most recent being just a few years ago in 2023. And despite having a reputation for appealing to geeks or nerds, celebrities such as NBA Spurs player Tim Duncan, comedian and host Stephen Colbert, and actors Vin Diesel and Deborah Ann Woll are all known for enjoying playing Dungeons & Dragons. I hope that if you find yourself with an offer to play, that you take a chance and see what the world of Dungeons & Dragons has to offer you. Thank you so much to Jeremy for letting us in on the world of a Dungeon Master, and thank you, my wonderlings, for coming back and listening to me. I have a special treat in store for my All Things Spooky lovers next month, so until next time, be safe, be kind, and stay curious. The Welcome to Wonderland podcast is copyrighted by Amy Bland and is distributed by Big Media, LLC. This podcast is recorded in and around Columbia, South Carolina. Any thoughts or opinions are those of the hostess unless otherwise indicated. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Please like, follow, and share the podcast. Check out the Welcome to Wonderland Linktree at linktree.com/WTWLpod to find out where to join me on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and more. When you find me, be sure to follow, like, share, subscribe, do all the things. It helps me grow. Visit www.WTWLpod for more information and to contact the hostess for corrections, additional information, or requests for episodes. Be sure to check out the other great Big Media podcast, the All About Nothing podcast with Barrett and Zach, is the OG podcast that got us all started. Black, White, and Blue in the South with Dr. Jamil Brooks and Bill Kemmler gives us a look at blue politics and a red state. What the Pod Was That? With Carrie, Barrett, and Zach will make you laugh out loud as they watch the best and the worst of what the internet has to offer. For a look at politics in South Carolina through the eyes of three young women, check out Politically Speaking, a new addition to the Big Media collection. Thanks for listening.
It's awful. I hate that. That's the worst. That's no fun. So not fun.
And the next guy's dead, so now it's my turn.
Yes. Yes, right. you're, she's very on top of it. She's more on top of it than I am.
All right. So I'm still a dire wolf.
Yes.
Just got the one bad guy. I am going to use my brute strength to try and rip his arm off.
Okay. So you do a little doggy run.
She's going to do it.
And she jumps up and tries to grab his arm. Okay. Roll again.
15.
Okay, you grab onto his arm.
And then I rolled a 12?
No.
8?
Something else happens.
Oh no.
Flings you into the portal.
No!
You don't fling him in. He doesn't fling you into the portal. You knock him into the portal. With you attached.
Uh-oh. Well, there were bound to be consequences.
Oh,
well,
no.
And the portal closes.
I mean, technically we won, right?
Yes!
Better outer than me!
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.